The Source Podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPonte.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. $2.9 billion, that's what's in the city's budget. They'll be spending that for fiscal year 2020. It's an increase of 3% over the previous year, but what's in those numbers? What do you find when you unpack the budget? How is the city council and the city hall staff looking to deal with the challenges of running a city of this size and dealing with the growth and looking to overcome some of the longstanding problems of our community? What are the city's top priorities in the budget? Are they in line with San Antonio residents? How will the ongoing fire union arbitration affect the 2020 budget? And what role did residents play in crafting this budget? Where there will be more opportunities for input before the council votes on the budget on September the 12th. And you can call in right now, offer your input on the budget. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. Tweet at us at TPR Source. So we're joined for the first half hour of The Source today with Eric Walsh, City Manager for the City of San Antonio. And City Manager Walsh, welcome to The Source. It's great to have you here.
Thanks for having me, David.
So what overall, what's the, just in a nutshell, and then we'll start picking it apart, unpacking the budget. What do you want people to know overall about the budget?
Well, number one, the council has gone through a pretty thorough process through the springtime and through June to set the priorities for the budget, and that was a process that they went through in June. And number two, the council in that June work session reaffirmed our financial policies and, you know, how we operate as a municipal organization. And number three, I'd say that we are preparing ourselves for the changing financial framework, not just here in San Antonio, but that's probably a conversation that every Texas city and county is going through, and that ties back to some of the changes that came out of the legislature in the spring.
And that's the a state law that caps, that was SB2, caps the revenue that cities can have before a voter referendum type thing.
Correct, yeah. Yep, that cap is now, beginning in 2021, will be 3.5%. And where that cap had been before was 8%. And so as we developed the budget, one of the things I was certainly mindful of was making sure we're prepared to enter 2021 with the financial framework set to minimize impact and be able to live within our means.
So when we hear that it's a $2.9 billion budget, a 3% increase over the previous year, these are big numbers, but what do they mean?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So our proposed budget, our total proposed budget is $2.9 billion, and that's made up of three main components. The first is our general fund, which operates and maintains and funds all of our basic services, police, fire, code, libraries, the health department. That portion of the budget is $1.27 billion, right? And it's that part of our budget is funded by property tax, sales tax, return on investment from CPS. That general fund budget is only growing 1.2% from FY19 to FY20. And that's where we'll see the most impact in 2021. So we wanted to manage down. You know, certainly, we need to focus on the council priorities and the community priorities. But overall growth of that budget in the general fund is right now not proposed to be higher than 1.2%. The rest of our budget, we've got $715 million in next year's budget for capital improvements. We're ongoing. We're going through the process of delivering our 2017 bond program, and we'll be heavy into construction next year on a number of projects. That includes projects at the convention center or the airport or a variety of other capital type improvements. And then the third component of that budget is our restricted funds. And when I say restricted funds, there are our lines of business, like the airport, where revenue that is earned at the airport is can only be spent in the airport. The solid waste fee that people pay for solid waste collection, that fee covers that cost of service. So that portion is $937 million. So that's the entire budget. But we tend to focus a lot on the general fund in terms of taxpayers, because that's where property taxes are deposited.
So we had heard from your predecessor, Cheryl Scully, a warning that there was a danger of paying for our police and firefighters and their salary and their health care and everything that was going to be in danger of crowding out some of the other necessary services that the city had to handle. Are we beginning to see that? Is that a problem?
Well, that's one of the financial policies that the council reaffirmed in June, and that's been in place for about 5 or 6 years now, where we will keep public safety spending in the general fund below 66%, and the proposed budget holds public safety spending at 64, a little over 64%. So we're managing that, and as an organization have done a much better job with the assistance of that financial policy of managing that. If you don't, and this goes back to the reason why we have this financial policy, we had seen as a city the cost of public safety continue to crowd out other services within the general fund. But right now we're still in compliance with our own financial policy at 64.3%.
But with the arbitration that's required with the firefighters union, what does that look like?
Well, so we're going through that arbitration process right now, and there's risk associated on both sides, and that was something that the voters approved. At the end of the day, the city's goal is to do three things. One, be fair to the employees, be fair to the firefighters. Two, it has to be affordable to the taxpayers and the residents of the community. And number three, we want to make sure that we at least attack and make changes in the long run on our healthcare expenses. And I'll point back to the police agreement that was signed 3 years ago. The police officers in their 5-year contract got a 17% pay adjustment in exchange for changes to healthcare. And we were able to use the cost avoidance of that healthcare to fund that. That's the same structure that we'll be pursuing, that we have been pursuing with the firefighters, and I think in the long run will set us up to continue to be a top attracted city when it comes to those types of jobs.
So the budget makes room for new police officers, 6, I believe, right?
16.
Mm-hmm. And but nothing for the firefighters. Is that just you're hitting pause on that because you don't know what the pay thing is going to be for them?
Well, part of it beyond that is that we had limited funds. We've had some revenue challenges this year, this fiscal year, and we're anticipating those to continue in next year in the general fund. We're seeing that right now our CPS revenue for this fiscal year is down about $14 million for the year. Some of that is driven by weather. A lot of it's being driven by natural gas prices and how low they are. That's great from a ratepayer perspective for you and I when we pay our CPS bills. We'll see beginning September 1st less revenue from telecommunication and cable right-of-way fees.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that because the city's losing $7 million in that area.
$7.5 million, yeah.
So I want to find out what happened there. Ask some other questions about some of the challenges for the budget. And our phone lines are open. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. City Manager Eric Walsh is with us to talk about the city budget. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the 2020 fiscal year city budget, almost $3 billion. Eric Walsh, the city manager, is here with us to tell us more. When we're going to break, we were talking about how the legislature took away this revenue source that cities across Texas depend, used. It was from the cable companies. And how much was that? And what happened there? And how much is my cable bill going to go down?
That's a good question. So SB 1152 that was approved by the legislature and signed by the governor is going to impact us beginning September 1st to the tune of about $7.5 million a year. And those were fees that telecommunication and cable providers paid cities for the use of the right-of-way.
Because they're going under our streets, right?
And along the streets, they're using public property they have to pay for that. And so that adjustment lowers that cost to the cable and the telecommunication providers. But from our perspective, that is $7.5 million in kind of a recurring revenue that we received every year that we've got to make up. And so that was another revenue challenge that we had to balance the budget.
So you may be a biased person to answer this question, but was this just a giveaway to the big telecoms from the legislature? Was there a public policy reason why they did that?
Oh, I think that question is probably better asked in a different direction. I've got a personal opinion, but I know that from a municipal standpoint, the argument was made that telecommunication providers and cable companies were being charged for two different rates, and their argument was it should be just one rate. It happened to be the lowest one, and so the question I chuckled at that you asked is probably a good question for everybody else to be asking as well.
So we have the homestead exemption now for the city of San Antonio. That's also this is what taxpayers apparently wanted. It was talked about in the recent city election. So how is that impacting the budget?
So property tax relief was one of the top five priorities that came out of that council work session in June, and they met on a Friday, and the following Monday we had a special council meeting for the council to approve an ordinance establishing that homestead exemption. It had to be done by July 1st. Overall, big picture, the city forgoes about almost $61 million a year in property tax revenue by either over 65 tax freeze, over 65 tax exemptions, tax exemptions for disabled and veterans, and now with the property tax exemption that the council approved, in total, that's $61 million that the city foregoes. This portion that the council implemented in late June, a little under $3 million a year that will go back to taxpayers, and it'll come out. It's about $5,000 per residential taxpayer.
People, when we talk about budget, a lot of numbers get thrown around and revenue and blah, blah, blah. There's a direct connection between the budget and the kind of city that we are and what we will be into the future. So can you kind of talk about that? How does that work? What's the connective tissue?
We've done a much better job of this the last couple of years every spring. Getting input from the community. And this year we had 11,000 people that participated and gave us input on the budget and the development of the budget. And that's valuable information for not only us, but the council as they set their priorities. We had surveys. Maria Villagomez, deputy city manager, and I had a teletown hall, David, and I was shocked when I heard the numbers. We had 2,400 people on the phone, kind of in a setting like this, where we're talking and people are calling in or Facebooking their questions in. And so part of that is making sure that we're close to what the community sees as a priority, and we're providing that to the council. That second layer is the council setting that priority as a group. And we walked out of there. I walked out of there in June with a pretty good roadmap of where the council wanted investments, and they wanted it in property tax relief, which we did the following week, something that we called broadly Strong Families and Children, which was a focus primarily on trauma-informed care and domestic violence, housing affordability, police, transportation, and those were the underlying issues that we focused on as we prepared the budget this summer.
So how will the budget, I mean, I've seen this quote, that this is a family-friendly budget. You're doing things to improve public safety and make San Antonio safer for families. How is that going to happen?
Well, one thing that we've done is we're adding additional park police officers to enhance the coverage for our continued expanded Creekway program. We are adding additional funding. And, you know, we did this with conversations before last week's terrible incidents in Dayton and in El Paso, but it was through a conversation with the police chief in the early summer. Areas like Southtown, North St. Mary's, Main Street, the Pearl, portions of Southeast Military Drive, places where folks are congregating in the evenings, whether they're going to dinner or entertainment, and we've set aside money in the budget to create some additional overtime shifts to have dedicated officers there, because you've got an uptick in the number of folks that are going to those parts of town in the evenings, and we wanted to make sure that we provide an additional level of security. I think long term, what the chief would prefer, and I think what I'd like to see is the addition of officers that are dedicated to those areas, and we're going to try to do that on an overtime basis this year.
So there was a recent report out looking at the status of women in Bexar County, commissioned by the city of San Antonio. It looked at how there is this epidemic of violence of women, sometimes fatal, brought on by their male intimate partner. Talk of trying to do something to deal with that problem in the world of domestic violence. And how's the budget going to take that on?
No, yeah, that was a top priority of the council, and you're absolutely right. I mean, when you look at the stats of San Antonio versus other cities, we need to do something in this community, and it's more than the city and the county and the service providers. It's a community effort. So we're going to set aside, I'm recommending we set aside $1 million to do a couple of things. One, a focused campaign for the community. Two, the creation of two school-aged violence prevention programs that are national best models that aren't here in San Antonio, and we'll start them here. Early July, Dr. Colleen Bridger and myself met with Judge Sakai and Judge Monique Diaz over at the courthouse, and we've created a commission to identify both programmatic and process gaps between, you know, whether it's the judiciary, law enforcement, healthcare, legal services, or service providers. And so part of that money that I'm recommending in the budget, we budget it but not allocate it, and wait till that group comes back and gives some recommendations to the council. And this has got to be a community effort, and some of the officers, the additional officers that we're adding in the budget, have a focus on domestic violence, and part of that is adding 10 safe officers, our community policing officers. But these safe officers are really going to be, they're going to be allocated in the areas of town where we have the highest violent crime and the highest number of calls for domestic violence. And part of their job is going to be to assist our crisis response teams and provide that follow-up with the victims 30, 60, 90 days afterwards, and make sure they know that there's help available. And sometimes it's going to take a little bit of an extra effort. And I think having dedicated officers to help do that, we'll continue to make some improvement.
So to deal with some of the budget issues, as you said, CPS Energy is having their shortfall, but you're looking to the San Antonio Water System, which also is a city-owned utility, to do more for the overall budget. Some people are concerned about how that would actually be passed along to ratepayers.
Right. Yeah, no, that's so when the city council approved the creation of SAWS in 1992, they set the kind of the return on investment or the use of right-of-way in the ordinance at a maximum of 5% of their revenue. And then the council there in 1992 set it at 2.7%, and it hadn't been adjusted since. And so, you know, one of the things that I looked at, and we closely coordinated with SAWS. I didn't want to create issues in another municipal agency. But to that telecommunications loss of $7.5 million in revenue permanently going forward, you address that one of three ways. You cut permanently services, you increase revenue, or you get a revenue source to replace it, or you do a combination of both. And I knew that in conversations with SAWS that they had the financial capability to increase that. They're well managed financially, and we're closely linked from a rating standpoint. And when I had those conversations directly with their finance folks and Robert Puente, he was capable. He felt comfortable of being able to do that. Now the question is that in the future that becomes a cost of service, and there's no doubt about that. Just like if the cost of maintaining water pipes goes up, or health insurance at SAWS for SAWS employees goes up, that's all part of the cost of service. And at some point we would have to acknowledge that what drives rates at a utility like SAWS is hundreds of millions or $1 billion worth of capital improvements. But there's no doubt it becomes a cost. And I definitely wanted to make sure that we were on the same page in early July. My alternatives were replace that lost telecommunications revenue before I go cut permanently services like code compliance or library or parks, the lower prioritized services. So
there's emergencies, things that come up during the year, and you have to find money for that. We had the pop-up resource center for the asylum seekers here in downtown San Antonio. The city has been there and giving resources and services to those individuals, going to the federal government, asking them to reimburse the city. They have the feds have passed money in Congress. Has that money gotten back to San Antonio?
No, it hasn't, but we're in process. I mean, the FEMA just released here about a week and a half ago the rules nationwide, and so we've been doing a really good job of tracking all of our expenses, and we'll be applying for that money. The federal government allocated $30 million for local communities to be reimbursed. 25 of that is being focused on border states, and so my hope will be that we get reimbursed for what we spent.
About how much? How much have we spent so far?
We've spent probably closer to $250,000, $300,000. We've spent more than that in terms of indirect cost. For the first couple of weeks, we had our mobile integrated health paramedics who were providing medical checks. And we've had a whole slew of city employees who have volunteered their time. Those indirect costs, probably another $600,000, and so we're going to be looking to provide that information and that reimbursement request to the federal government. We've had almost 30,000 people come through San Antonio since March 30th, and practically all of them are on their way to another part of the country, and they're all part of the federal asylum seeking process. And they all got a piece of paper from the federal government saying they got to be somewhere. If it wasn't for partners like Travis Park Church and Catholic Charities and the Interfaith Welcome Coalition and Food Bank in the city, I don't know where those 30,000 people would have slept.
And the feedback, real quickly, that you've heard from the citizens, do you think they've been supportive of what the city has done there?
I think there's been a varying level of opinions. It's a political hot button issue. And to be honest with you, David, if the perspective that I've focused on is that what's the right thing to do for these folks? They can't be sleeping on the sidewalk downtown, and we got to treat them right.
Eric Walsh is the city manager for the city of San Antonio. He's been talking about the 2020 city budget. We got to let him go. But when we come back, we're going to continue talking about the city budget, and the phone lines are open. It's 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues after this.
Immigration.
I think we need to all get in before the wall goes up.
Health.
The Promotora, they have all the resources that can get them the help that they need.
Art.
There's this kind of subversiveness to it, right?
We cover all these topics and more on Fronteras as we examine issues along the border and beyond. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras where you find your favorite podcasts.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. What do you want to know about the city's proposed budget for fiscal year 2020? Did you participate in the public input process? Did the city's priorities, do they align with what you want the city of San Antonio to spend money on? How could you change, what would you change about what we're doing in San Antonio, particularly when it comes to public safety, parks, libraries, code compliance, senior services, street improvements? Give us a call. Talk about what kind of city you want to have. How are we going to pay for it? It's all up to you. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Eric Walsh, the city manager for the city of San Antonio, has decided he's going to stick around for the next half hour. So we have him longer than we had budgeted for, but yeah, that's what budgets are for. They're just a projection. You never know what you're actually going to end up with. Also with us is Maria Villagomez. She's the deputy city manager for the city of San Antonio. And Laura Mays, she's the Chief Communications Officer for the City of San Antonio. And again, the number is 210-614-8980. And let's go straight to the phones with John. And hey, John, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks for having me. You know, I just learned that yesterday was the last day of the season for San Pedro Springs Pool. And I'm just curious, what is the city budget doing in order to make the season longer for our area pools? Thanks.
All right. Let's go to Maria Villagomez. We haven't heard from you yet, Deputy City Manager for the City of San Antonio. The pool season, and the thing about San Pedro, this is a great historic site. These used to be natural fed springs, and people have compared it to what they have in Austin with Barton Springs. Why don't we have a facility like Barton Springs?
Yeah, well, excellent question. I know the city pools are very popular during this time of the year. And based on the resources that we have available for our parks department and for the priorities of the city, the pool season is ending. I will tell you that we have expanded the season over the past probably 10 years. We are open during spring break, and then we are open in extended season to allow for those different schedules where different school districts go back to school at different times of the year. So we know that it's a priority for the community. Our proposed budget currently does not include an expansion of the pools, and it's all about priorities. It's about the resources that we have available to work with, but that is an excellent point. We know the community loves our pools, and we're always getting creative to try to figure out a way to extend them. So I will take that as a note and as a request to look at alternatives to extend the hours of our pools.
And the pool season tends to end with the start of the school year. Now the schools are back in session. A lot of people depend. I know when I was a lifeguard many, many years ago, that you would see people would depend upon the city pools as a place to keep your kids occupied during the workday. And during the year when the San Pedro pool is not in season, y'all sort of construct it differently where it's become sort of a landscape feature. It's still not for swimming, but it's still available in a very picturesque kind of way. So what do y'all, can you kind of fill me in on what is it that y'all want that pool to be? I know any big overhaul of the pool would require like a bond issue type of a program, but it's still a great part of San Antonio. Any idea what's the vision for San Pedro's park and the pool?
You know, that is one of the topics that we are going to be considering for our 2022 bond program. We have gotten interest from some private organizations to maybe partner with the city to make that particular pool, San Pedro Parks Pool, a facility that is open year-round. So that is something that we're considering and working towards making some recommendations for the 2022 bond program.
Yeah, because the headwaters of the San Pedro Creek are a significant part of San Antonio's history. So I want to go back to talking about the strong families and children. And there's this $1.6 billion being put in the budget for a coordinated effort to address family violence and provide trauma-informed care. So Maria Villagomez, can you talk a little bit more about trauma-informed care and how is that something that is in the budget?
Yes. So as it was mentioned by the city manager, strong families and children was one of the was actually the number one priority for the council. And the budget addresses that by including $1 million directed for domestic violence and about $600,000 for trauma-informed care. Now, trauma-informed care is something that is not only being championed by the City of San Antonio. Our Dr. Bridger, our assistant city manager, has been working with other partners, including the University Health System, to partner with them. And the proposal is to open a clinic that will assist those providers that interact with children and families about trauma-informed care, and to be able to provide the assistance and the support that is needed. So those individuals that are dealing with children and families day in and day out are prepared to understand the issues and be able to address them as well. So the budget includes funding to be able to do that partnership.
David, one other thing I was going to add is that when we talk about trauma, it could be domestic violence. It could be a child who may have a parent who's incarcerated. But as children are growing and they see or they're part of those traumas in their life, it changes how the brain is wired and how they learn and how they react. And so the idea in this partnership with UHS is to set up a place where agencies can be certified. And the idea is that in the long run, this will be kind of a self-sufficient effort, but it doesn't exist anywhere in Texas right now. And we want to do it here, and it goes to the point that you were making at the first half hour where you look at the stats of San Antonio. We're going to have to do something different here. We're going to have to do something more. And how do we provide that awareness to a principal or a school teacher or somebody else who may come in contact with that child who may be going through that trauma?
And we have children who are impacted when their adult parents become involved with opioid crisis.
Yep, yep.
And that's a big problem for the area. I know there's this lawsuit where is the city involved in that lawsuit? Because the city has also invested a lot of money in dealing with the opioid crisis as well.
We do. We're not as heavily as impacted as the county. And actually, on this week's council agenda, there's a resolution of support. We're not part of the county's lawsuit. There's a separate lawsuit that the city is undertaking. That's actually on the agenda this week.
And so the city would be looking to recoup what it spent on dealing with this opioid crisis.
Yes.
If it's found in the courts that this was actually a manufactured crisis for profit by the pharmaceutical companies. I've heard the words equity lens used a lot in previous budgets, and I heard a lot from your predecessor, the previous city manager. Does it mean the same thing? Because it's a word you hear a lot, but I'm not really sure what it exactly means. So what does equity lens mean to Eric Walsh?
So you're right. It means a lot of things to a lot of different people. Equity lens in terms of budgeting is recognizing that there are some services or some populations or some areas of town that have historically not received the resources, and making sure that we're focused based on the need. And the example I gave in the first half hour, the 10 community policing domestic violence officers, you know, it'd be real easy just to drop them off and spread them out all over this huge city.
You put one in each district.
Well, no, that's too easy. I mean, the fact of the matter is that we should focus them in the areas where we have literally the most domestic violence calls and the highest amount of violent calls. And so, you know, it's a novel approach, and some would say it's not rocket science. But it is different from a governmental standpoint. What we're trying to do is we're trying to improve, in this example, we're trying to improve an outcome, and we're trying to be focused and have services or response capability in those areas of town where we need it. And so that's just one example, and we've got there's a whole host of them throughout the budget. We're mindful of that.
Yeah, we'll get into that. We did get an email from Renee. I read that micromobility is a priority in his budget. What does that mean, Eric Walsh?
So for the first time ever.
That's scooters, right?
Well, it's more than scooters. It could be bicycles. It could be pedestrians. It could be scooters. It could be the next whatever that's 12 months down the road.
Hoverboards.
Yeah. We don't need any lanes for those. We're adding a group of a small team in the budget. I'm proposing that we add a small team to do nothing but focus on micro-mobility projects, not just the planning, but the actual implementation. We hired a pedestrian mobility officer in the springtime, and these folks, this team will work for this individual, and it's making sure that whether we're dealing with sidewalks or bicycle lanes or micro-mobility lanes, that we've got somebody, a group of somebody whose job it is when they wake up every morning to think about it and do it. So we've placed that, I'll be honest with you, that was, I met with every department this summer to go through the budget, and that was the only question where I asked the department, should we be adding a team to do this?
So are these like experts? Are they going to be like learning everything there is to know about cities and micro-mobility, and they're going to be at the table figuring out how is San Antonio going to take control of this new thing? Or are they going to be on a street corner yelling at people to wear helmets? I mean,
No. They're on the capital side, the either sidewalks or bicycle lanes. Part of that is making sure that we've got standards in place, but I want more doing than I want planning.
Okay, we're taking a break. We'll be right back. We're talking about the San Antonio fiscal year 2020 budget. When we come back, we're going to hear more about how you can get involved in crafting this budget, make sure that it reflects your priorities for the city of San Antonio. You can also call in right now and let us know what you want. Number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Call in. The number is 210-614-8980. You got a question or a comment about how San Antonio is spending the money to run the city, prepare the city, invest in the city. 210-614-8980. We got another comment from the email from Cody. How much lower is San Antonio's revenue stream this year if it's just that $7 million from telecom? That's not very much if we're growing city. Extra spending is a result. So we are growing city. Does that mean extra revenue? I mean, it's not just the $7 million shortfall from the telecom. There's all these other things, too. Let's go to Maria Villa Gomez.
Sure. So I'm going to take the general fund as to answer the question, which is our largest operating fund of the city and provides most of the services the community is interested in, like police and fire and parks. This budget is $1.2 billion annually. The growth and the revenues that come into the general fund, and that includes CPS, energy payment, property tax, sales tax, that grew 3%. So the revenues are growing. Not as fast as in other years. Other years we've seen growth of 4 or 5%. So some of the challenges that were described in the past are CPS revenues. We're having some challenges with that due to the weather and due to low fuel prices and also telecom fees as well. And most of you have heard that the Federal Reserve Bank decreased the interest rate for some of the investments that cities like San Antonio participate in, and that had an impact on our revenues.
But does that also improve, like, how much it's going to cost to borrow money for your bonds?
Not necessarily. We are right now, we have one of the highest ratings when it comes to a municipal agency. So
as the best ratings.
Correct.
Highest, not in
correct.
Bad, but in good.
Really, really good ratings. So so we are already pay one of the lowest interest rates when it comes to debt. So in terms of our general fund revenues, the growth, again, is 3%, not as strong as in prior years, but still our revenue stream is growing.
So Laura Mays, Chief Communication Officer for the City of San Antonio, what other opportunities do people have to express themselves about what's going to go on with this budget?
Well, there's a lot of ways to get involved. First up, we have a community day coming up on Saturday at Traders Village. And these are ways for the community to get involved, come and meet their city departments, see what city services are available to them, ask questions of both Maria and Eric right there in person, and also just get to know their neighbors. That starts at noon. We'll have another one on August 24th at 9 a.m. at the Rustic at the Rim. And so as you can tell, we're trying to pick locations that are a little more family-friendly. Lots of people can just come out and enjoy, have breakfast, have some snacks, and also get to know their city. And then on August 29th, we'll also have a telephone town hall meeting, like the city manager mentioned earlier. It's an easy way to get involved. You don't have to leave your house. So if you need to make dinner, get it on the table, you can still participate in this meeting too. All of those are available at saspeakup.com.
Y'all have put out some data about what people are asking about. And Laura Mays, what seems to be at the top of the charts? What are the hits?
Well, as we reviewed the survey results and planned for the fiscal year 2020 budget, we did see that housing affordability was the community's top priority. Streets and infrastructure, public safety are always near the top, but this year it was housing affordability. And as we asked questions about what specifically residents wanted to fund in those specific categories, domestic violence and child abuse also came out as a top priority. So I think this budget really addresses the community's priorities as well.
Eric Walsh, it's not by a little, but by a lot that affordable housing is a top of mind for San Antonio residents. Is that localized? Is that across the board? And what do they mean by they're concerned about affordable housing?
Well, it's across the board. And, you know, as I've gone to community meetings and neighborhood association meetings across the city, that's been a constant. And I think it probably means a couple of different things. It could be a subset of property tax relief. It could be a subset of not being able to afford the rent for where they're staying. I think it's probably a compilation of a lot of things. But what it tells me is that the investments that we're doing now on in the areas of affordable housing, and that the council has set as a priority for the last 2 years, are putting us in a position where we avoid a housing crisis like some other cities are going through right now. And the more we do now, I think the better off we are. The housing task force that the council received last year targeted 18,681 additional affordable housing units in this community over 10 years, and we put a pretty big dent in that this year, and we'll be working on that next year as well.
Affordable housing is a national problem, and it is a product of macroeconomic trends. It's not something that cities are really good at trying to counter. So I know the cities have a role to play, but do you think that we need to have wider conversations saying, yeah, we're going to do what we can, but you also have to realize the housing situation really is a product of national tax policy and other things that people need to study up on a little bit.
Well, not just national tax policy, but state, and I think that there are states in this country that give municipalities the ability to hold constant homeowners' values. If you've got two homes that are valued at $100,000, and somebody buys one, and redoes it and puts $150,000 into it, the next door neighbor who's been sitting there for 30 years, guess what's going to happen to their value?
If their comps, they're going up.
That's right, they're going up. There are some states in this country where municipalities have the ability to hold constant that value, that next door neighbor that's impacted, and then when that house turns over to sold or given to a family member or whatever, then there's a catch up period. Now, that's a much broader macroeconomic issue, but would require some changes at the state level, and I think that would help us with additional tools to help some of these areas of town that are going through gentrification.
We have a comment on Twitter. How much is going towards resources for animal care services? Maria Villagomez, can you talk about, you know, our stray cats and dogs and other issues like that?
Sure. Our animal care services department, their annual budget is close to $17 million, $17, $18 million annually. We've done a lot of progress in that area. We're still impounding about 31,000 cats and dogs on an annual basis, and we're able to either adopt out or return to owner about 91% of those pets. a lot of work to be done in that area. So we continue to focus with the current funding that we have to be more smart about it, more strategic about it, so we can improve primarily in educating our community to be responsible pet owners, and also to manage those resources that we have to be able to maximize the outcomes of our department.
So Eric Walsh, city manager for San Antonio, there's a lot going on here, just maintaining the city, getting the filling in the potholes, making sure the sidewalk cracks are corrected, all these other things. But it's also planning for the future, making sure that San Antonio remains economically competitive, we're able to attract job providers. How does this budget look towards the future of San Antonio?
Well, number one, I think it sets us in a financial framework that we'll need to be at by next summer with the changes in SB2. This proposed budget is balanced over the next 2 years, not just the next year, and that's one of our own financial policies. I think it continues to invest in economic development efforts and the priorities of the council, but you know, I think we're going to have, with that framework conversation and changing revenue structure for us, we can manage through all that. There's no doubt. It's going to require us to be very clear in our expectations and be very clear in setting priorities as a community. And if those two things are done, then I'm confident that we'll be able to manage through that framework issue. It's reality, and the public expects it, and the council expects it, and it's something that we'll do well.
And we're still expecting all these people to move to San Antonio. We're still talking about San Antonio being a high-growth city. That puts a strain on the budget to prepare for all the people who aren't here yet, and in addition to the people who are here now. So how are we doing that?
Well, we're going to have to be mindful of the fact that in the reality, we're going to have to continue to add officers and fire stations and code officers and make sure that we've got money set aside to maintain streets. We're going to need to make sure that we've got the development policies in place that help direct that type of growth to make it consistent with the quality of life that we want here in San Antonio. There's a lot to do, and there's going to be a lot of things that we're going to need to do to set plans in place to be able to afford to pay those things.
And congestion mitigation, making sure transportation is moving, is that also a part of the budget?
Sure. Yeah, the council approved a grant application through the federal government in the spring, and the budget includes almost $5.5 million in terms of a local match, all directed towards projects that are focused on congestion mitigation and air quality.
And so with the growth that we have in San Antonio, it's not just happening in one location. It's kind of happening all over. And as these neighborhoods become revitalized, there's demands there. Streets, do they need extra attention? Is that also part of the equity lens, that making sure that the growth is happening across the city in a framework that benefits the entire city?
It is. And the council's got policies in place right now where we are looking at making sure that we're incentivizing that type of growth, or at least encouraging that type of growth in those 13 regional centers throughout the city, so that we can concentrate those efforts.
All right. Eric Walsh is the city manager for the city of San Antonio. Maria Villa Gomez, he's deputy city manager for the city of San Antonio. Laura Mays is the chief communications officer for San Antonio. There are a couple more opportunities to weigh in with these officials as they go out into the community looking to hear from you about what you want for your city. And we'll have that information posted on our website at tpr.org. I'm David Martin Davies. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia, and Jan Ross Piedad. Dan Katz is TPR's news director.